All right, thank you very much. I'm Adam Burgess. I'm a third-year medical student from the University of Vermont, and I'm going to talk about the impact of food programs, specifically school food programs, on health and specifically child behavior. I have no relationships to disclose. So just a quick pitch. As you heard from my intro, this isn't necessarily my first topic of interest. I have interests outside of food insecurity and health, but as part of our second year medical school curriculum, we have to do MD 565, which is our public health project course. Excuse me. And so 16 projects are chosen every year for our class of roughly 110 students, and we're all assigned to a project. We have roughly 6 months to complete the project, which culminates in a poster presentation at our university. But we've really, our school's really been pushing the public health aspect, and we actually, of those 16 projects, have 7 being presented here at this conference this year. So we're actually doing quite a bit of good work in this program. So again, just to throw a little pitch. So a little background. So there's more and more research coming out that home food insecurity in children is presenting itself in other ways, especially in the classroom, with regards to both internal and external negative behaviors. But specifically internal negative behaviors, that being anxiety and depression showing up in kids at a younger age due to food insecurity. A specific study by Whitaker in 2006 showed that not only is there a correlation, but there's an actual level correlation. So the more food insecure these children are, the more problems they tend to have. And these school food programs may be one way that we can sort of combat these problems at home and help mitigate some of these problems in children. So our project, we were actually assigned to work with a particular school in Burlington, the Burlington Children's Space. This is a private preschool that accepts children from age 6 weeks to 5 years, but it's on a sliding scale tuition, so it allows for a wide degree of both socioeconomic and ethnic diversity. Burlington, although a small town of roughly 35,000 people when school is not in session, has a surprising amount of diversity, a large refugee population, specifically Somalia, the Congo, and more recently Syria and Iraq due to the recent wars. And so this school really accepts all comers, and they've made a point to. But they also have this new groundbreaking food program, and this was actually a program started with the help of one of our previous public health projects back in 2007 that sort of blossomed. And so now they offer breakfast, snack, and lunch daily to every child. They also offer weekly take-home bags, so on Friday afternoons, kids can take a bag home with food for the weekend. Usually what it is it consists of enough food to make a family meal, along with recipes to tell them how to use the ingredients that are in the box. And then they also get holiday take-home boxes. So like with the upcoming Thanksgiving holiday, they've accepted donations from some of the more affluent families in the school, and then they'll put together boxes and send them home with kids for the holiday. And then also there's a large number of partnerships that they've established with local farms, CSAs, Community Supported Agriculture, and others, so that they're getting fresh produce delivered on-site on a weekly and in the warmer months almost daily basis. So not only are these kids getting food, but they're getting a really high quality level of food. And so our hypothesis going in was that this food program essentially acts to mitigate these problems with internal behaviors we're seeing in kids. That is to say that if we can find food insecure kids, essentially we're dampening or lessening this food insecurity because of the food they're receiving at school. And so we found 42 kids that were eligible at the Burlington Children's Space based on age, and the age was based on the fact that we were going to use the child behavior checklist for ages 1.5 to 5 years. And I'll talk more about that in a second. Of those 42, 25 were allowed to participate based on parental permission, 9 males and 16 females. And then we stratified them as either food secure or food insecure, so we had 16 food secure and 9 food insecure children. So food insecurity was, first we used the U.S. Household Food Insecurity 6-item short form. So similar to the survey that he just talked about in the previous talk. And those asked questions like, in the last 12 months, how many times have you not eaten for fear of not having enough food for your children? Because of some of the other issues that surround filling out this form, it's supposed to be self-administered, but the teachers and administration at Burlington Children's Space were gracious enough to actually sit down with these patients, or not patients, but participants, and go over this form with them and help them fill it out. And then we weren't entirely convinced, based on information we were getting from the school, that all the surveys were necessarily accurate, and so we decided to do a second measure of food insecurity, and that being eligibility for the Child and Adult Care Food Program, or what would have been known in the past as sort of the free and reduced lunch program. And so we looked at that as well, and in the end, all those who were determined to be food insecure by the U.S. household model did in fact qualify for free and reduced lunch. But there were two additional children who qualified for free and reduced lunch that had not shown up as food insecure using the survey. And then with regards to child behavior, again, we used the child behavior checklist. This is a fairly well-validated form. It was actually developed at University of Vermont back in the 60s and 70s, but we used that due to the fact that previous research had used the same form, so it just allowed for easy carryover. So some of those questions, so with regards to addressing internal behaviors, we're looking for things, again, like depression and anxiety. So does the child look unhappy without good reason, nervous, high-strung, or tense, too fearful, as opposed to looking at external problems such as outward behaviors like aggression, does he destroy things, physically attacks people, screams a lot, so acting out. And again, the previous research has shown that really what we're seeing is more issues with these internal problems like anxiety and depression. And so the raw data, for every student that there was a child behavior checklist filled out for, we did an independent T-score. And these are adjusted for gender. But the mean T-scores for the food insecure group for internal problems was 43.56, with the food insecure at 47, so slightly higher. Mean external problems, 43.88 versus 51.75, so again higher. And then a mean for the total problems, 41.38 versus 49, so again higher. However, when we actually did our statistical analysis, what we see is there is in fact a statistical difference in external and total problems in these children with respect to behavior. But with respect to internal problems, there was no statistical difference between the two groups, meaning that the food insecure children showed no more internal behavioral problems than the food secure children. And so our conclusions, the BCS food program does demonstrate a statistically significant reduction in these negative internal behaviors in children that are food insecure. I mean, we understand that with this project, our N is small, right? It's not necessarily super high powered, but it does sort of open the door to looking at this on a greater scale, and that was really the goal of our project. Food insecurity is complex and difficult to assess, and we saw some of these issues with regards to filling out the survey on food insecurity. Stigma often is a barrier to these people filling these out accurately, and then there's also a number of confounders that come into play here, and we've thought about some of these things, but they're more difficult to assess. So does the fact that these kids receive food at school help mitigate not only the child's anxiety but the parent's anxiety, so that the household in general is a less stressful place? Using the free and reduced lunch program as sort of the measure of food insecurity was found to increase the statistical significance of our findings as opposed to just the food security survey. So again, limitations, small sample size, and it may not be representative of the general population, especially in Burlington. But again, this was sort of a door opener, and hopefully we can take this to the larger public school programs in the area, which actually already have fairly good school food programs, but to sort of expand on them. And so future directions would be to look at this on a sort of regional level in our area, see if we can see these same sorts of results in a larger school district, such as the Burlington School District, and then take it from there and hopefully expand it outward. Little recognition. Again, this was a group project, so I was one of seven students that worked on this, so I'd like to thank the other members of my team, our faculty advisor, Dr. Janice Gallant, and then our PI, Dr. Jan Carney. And then a special thanks to the BCS director, Sarah Adam Kolitz, and also the entire staff at Burlington Children's Space, who were really amazing helping us gather this data. Thank you.
First of all, I applaud you and your school.
breakfast, lunch, and snack, there is some state funding and federal funding that's being used for that. The bag lunches are really a sort of in-house driven project, and so that's really being taken on by the administrators at the school themselves at this point. Yes, for the large part, many of these meals were vegetarian to begin with, just because of their partnerships with local farms, it was easy to get a lot of fresh produce. There's a large Muslim population, and so many of them don't eat a large amount of meat, and so that was taken into consideration. With regards to translation, I don't believe that's the case, but one great resource is the lunch lady at BCS is an amazing woman. Her name's Erin. She actually has a blog, bcslunchlady.blogspot, where you guys can actually go online, and she does daily, if not weekly, updates as to what they're serving, how she's preparing it. She has recipes online, so it's actually a really amazing resource. So you can actually get a lot of information there. I think for the large part, yes. I think, this is a small school, so this isn't like there's boxes lined up and people are grabbing them when they go out the door. There's a lot of communication between the people at this school and the parents as they come in, and so I think it's sort of tailored as people walk out the door. Was a one-time assessment. There was no direct intervention from our group. So the assessments were completed around the end of October this time last year. And so the children had been in school. It wasn't the first day back after summer break where they may have gone without food for some time. So they were roughly 2 months into the school year when the survey was completed. Yeah. Anecdotally, I haven't heard anything, and actually to the contrary, I think anecdotally we've seen some of the, with regards to the child's behavior when they're coming back from weekends and long breaks, I think the teachers have really noticed a difference in those kids having food over those breaks. Teachers used to notice a lot of food hoarding and fighting over food come Monday morning after long weekends and those sorts of things in these children, and they have said anecdotally that they've seen a decrease in those behaviors with the onset of these giving food bags at the weekend. Part of the reason this isn't applicable to necessarily these larger school districts that we may be talking about later is the fact that this is really a community in this school. I mean, these people know each other inside and out, and these families are the parents included, are an integral part of this community. So it's kind of hard to separate one from the other in this case, which is, again, this is a door opener. This isn't a conclusive.
I mean, they do follow the guidelines because they're based on, so although they're receiving sort of produce and all stuff on a daily basis, they are still meeting those guidelines, but they have to for funding. And so the boxes, I believe, follow the same format. I don't know exactly what's in the boxes every week, but there is protein and fresh produce and then some sort of carbohydrate as well. If you want more specific, again, I would refer you to that BCS Lunch Lady blog, because you'll have it laid out really well. Yeah, thank you.